I was dying.
I thought you were going all the way.
The three O'Neill kids are checking out a new sledding hill. On top of the hill, Karina, 13 years old, and the big sister.
I can make it.
At the bottom, 8-year-old James, the baby brother.
Hey, pip squeak.
And Alex, the 10-year-old middle child, ready for the first run.
But the person that makes it closest to the fence wins.
The O'Neill kids live with their parents in a small town in the Rocky Mountain West, a pretty typical white working-class family, with one big exception.
Let's go!
Until just this year, Alex was known as Amy because everyone, even his parents, thought he was a girl.
And I drew a picture of a girl, like an x-ray, and drew the brain and said, girl's body, boy's brain.
An overheard conversation set Alex on a path to legally and socially change his gender identity.
Because they're just like, what? What?
Uncharted territory for Alex, his family, and the rest of his community.
Well, now it's not your daughter anymore. So, you know, that kind of crushes some people's dreams.
Yeah, I'm losing a daughter, but I am gaining a son.
I don't want to be in the middle like a tomboy. I want to be all the way to a boy.
This is his story, Alex, not Amy, and what it was like to become, to the world, the boy he always was inside.
I knew I wanted to be a boy, for real.
Christmas Eve, we're going to make a lot of cookies, so then on Christmas Eve we can watch The Grinch.
10-year-old Alex O'Neill is growing up in the Rocky Mountain West against a backdrop of discrimination.
Right now, but then you hear stories of people who are, you know, bullied and killed and maimed and all this kind of stuff for being transgender.
His parents, Mark and Cheryl O'Neill, worry.
I don't know what the future's going to hold, and I don't want anyone to be able to go out on Google or anything else and use it against them.
It's for those reasons the identity of this family is guarded in this story. According to a study by the Williams Institute at UCLA, here's the reality for transgender people in the United States. 28 transgender people died by homicidal violence in 2017, the most ever recorded. 45% of transgender young adults consider suicide. 78% of transgender kids who experience violence at school attempt suicide. So it was tough for the O'Neills to be optimistic about Alex's future. But let's go back to a time before Alex was Alex.
When we had our first kid, I was about to write a book because I thought I was that good of a parent.
A second child came along 2.5 years later. They called the baby Amy.
Kind of a sullen little baby. Didn't really smile very much.
When we had our second kid, he came out with a scowl on his face. And he basically had that for 2 years.
Looking back, Cheryl thinks she saw some clues to the unhappiness watching her kids play.
Always the boy, the groom, the wizard, the husband. So that was kind of... that was a pretty big clue.
The O'Neills knew something was up with the child they called Amy. They just weren't sure what.
I never really said he's going to be a boy, but I always sort of thought he would be the boy-like kid.
You're eating all of them? I thought that's why you put them on the plate.
That was not your plate.
The family always refers to Alex as Alex and him. The girl, Amy, never comes up and only does here to make this story easier to understand. For the first years of his life, Alex was treated like a girl by everyone who knew him. And why wouldn't they? He was, from all appearances, female. But when he was just past toddlerhood, he began to rebel.
He started not wanting to wear girls' clothes really early, like maybe 4 or 5 years old. And he never really said that it was because they were girls' clothes, but he'd always have some excuse, like they were too soft or they were too scratchy or, you know, they didn't feel right on his skin. And so he always kind of got his way as to what things he wanted to wear.
This is the only case I can think of where a child believes themselves to be in a social category that everyone else, at least initially, does not believe they're in.
Dr. Christina Olson at the University of Washington in Seattle is conducting a 20-year study following hundreds of transgender kids and measuring their mental health through puberty and into adulthood. Olson's sample group comprises 3 to 12-year-olds from across the country who have socially transitioned at a very young age.
Kind of between the second birthday and third birthday, the majority of kids will come to very clearly and regularly identify themselves as a particular gender. Now,
the study will measure basic gender development and if and why kids persist or switch back to their natal gender. They'll record the support these young people get from their families, schools, and communities. The study will even look at the impact of location on mental health of transgender youth.
It obviously seems like it would be very hard to be transgender, especially in certain parts of the country.
In the rural West, only 0.3% of adults identify as transgender. But a recent survey by the Williams Institute at UCLA shows a remarkable 27% of California teenagers consider themselves gender nonconforming.
I think it's a hard position for parents to be in, to decide what to do and to have so many people expressing such strong opinions, many of whom have maybe never met a transgender kid.
The children in this study have the support of a parent or guardian who is allowing them to express their gender identity.
You know, is this a good decision? You know, what are the implications for a child's well-being? 41% of adults who are transgender attempt suicide. Is this anything like a solution to that problem?
The early results of Olson's study are positive.
But the fact that they were doing as well as they are doing was pretty surprising to me.
When Olson began her study, she worried about finding 50 willing participants, but she now has nearly 300. Alex is not part of the study, but he does fit the criteria.
People who didn't know us would refer to him as a boy. And we sort of were always correcting them. It was kind of annoying, actually. And then we'd ask him, do you want us to correct them? Or do you want to correct them? You can say I'm a girl. And he'd be like, oh, I guess. Or it doesn't really matter to me. Or, you know. And so then I started changing it to, do you like it when people call you a boy? And he said, I do, kind of.
So Alex started kindergarten, still known as Amy. He dressed like a boy and hung out with the boys at recess, but a problem started for him in the girls' bathroom.
I was, like, wearing boy clothes and stuff, and I would walk in there, and they would kind of be like, I think you're in the wrong bathroom.
So he'd get off the bus and run home as fast as he could so he could go to the bathroom, which I didn't realize either until he told me later that he was not going all day long.
I'm kind of a goody-goody, and I didn't feel like, I felt like that would be breaking a rule since I wasn't really legally a boy.
So the O'Neills asked the principal to make an accommodation.
Because the principal is willing to let him use a different bathroom, but not the boys' bathroom.
The principal suggested Alex use a bathroom in the gym, down a long hallway from the other bathrooms.
He still didn't use it regularly because it was out of the way. You know, what little kid wants to miss recess to go to the bathroom?
This is a very real experience we're having, and we need to be prepared to respond appropriately.
Mark Thane is the superintendent of public schools in Montana's second largest school district. Montana has the fourth smallest K-12 population in the U.S., but this district has been ahead of the curve on transgender policy.
We will regard students by the gender with which they identify and utilize the appropriate pronouns.
Thane's district updated its inclusivity policy in 2015, including protections for gender nonconforming students in school and in extracurricular activities.
In the olden days, we might not have had partitions or dividers between urinals, maybe even stools in restrooms, and making sure that we do. Individual shower stalls, those kinds of things.
In 2017, both Montana and South Dakota legislatures considered bills limiting transgender students' rights. Neither passed. And while schools in Montana and other Western states now enjoy local control, Thane says he anticipates some policy challenges under the Trump administration.
And I think that's unfortunate, again, because the students' best interests are what are critical in my mind. And I think the failure to recognize this as a very real need would be a travesty.
When Alex started elementary school, the O'Neills became hyper aware of how often the students were separated by gender.
And when they'd stand up to do their Christmas program, they always, you know, sometimes they'd have the boys on one side and the girls on one side, and he would always be right in the middle. So he'd be on the edge so that he could, you know, scooch himself over to the boy part if he really had to.
In the fall of Alex's second grade year, he made an especially touching plea to his parents.
Begged and begged and begged us to buy him a little suit, pinstripe suit with a little vest for the Christmas program, or holiday program. You know, and he wrote this little heartbreaking letter about why he wanted to, and he was going to pay his own money, why he wanted to buy this little suit that he saw at Walmart. And I said, no, because everybody already thinks you're a boy. And then he wrote this little letter about, I'll tell everybody I'm not a boy, and please, please, please let me get it. So we get him this little suit, and he looked, you know, like the best-dressed little boy there.
But Alex was still legally Amy, and a girl, and spent the next 2 years uncomfortably walking that gender line.
Well, it all kind of started when my husband and I were talking about someone else we knew that was going to start taking hormones to change their gender or, you know, become more masculine, and he was overhearing us, so he said, oh, you can do that?
And then you could see an epiphany kind of come over him that he realized that's who he was.
I'm like, I want to be a boy, Mom. I don't feel like I'm a girl.
Mark and Cheryl O'Neill's 10-year-old Amy had just told them he wanted to become a boy. A real boy. They asked Alex to write them a letter to put in writing what he was feeling.
I mean, if you could have read that letter that he wrote to us, that was so, he just said he felt so alone and like he was the only person in the world that felt this way. And he always thought he should be a boy and he didn't understand why he wasn't a boy. And so to know, for him to realize that there were other people that felt that same way, I think was just a huge, huge relief to him.
Mark and Cheryl talked intensely with Alex over the next several days. The family was getting ready for a summer vacation when Alex broke the news to sister Karina and brother James.
Mom says that I might get to be a boy. And I was just like, what? That's like, wow. But then I thought about it and I was like, well, that makes sense. I think of him more as a boy than a girl, so.
And his little brother, who's a couple years younger, he was okay with it too a little bit, but I think his big thing was he used to be the only boy.
Cheryl and Mark told Alex he could try it out and live as a boy the entire vacation. That meant using the men's room and wearing a boy's swimsuit.
I mean, he enjoyed it, embraced it. You could see he was comfortable in his own skin probably for the first time in his life. Which was very neat to see.
Mark and Cheryl knew making a change was the right thing to do for Alex, and they set about deciding on a new name.
And all the names you picked out were from all the TV shows he's watching, you know, all those tween Disney movies, which made me roll my eyes. So I said, you know, I got to name you the first. I get to pick your name, I said. It's just how it is. Your parents get to pick your name, and you have kids, you can pick their names. So, too bad.
Once they decided Amy would now be Alex, they got ready to share the news. They were anxious about the reaction from their family, especially Alex's religious grandparents.
I said, can you call him? Because I didn't really know what to say about it. Like, hey, Grandma, I'm Mom. I want to be a boy now.
According to Mark, the grandparents were perhaps a bit confused, but totally supportive of their now grandson. Then Mark and Cheryl reached out to the parents of Alex's best friends.
Their reaction was kind of like, well, that's not news to us sort of thing. I mean, I don't really know if they thought he was transgender in that sense. All his friends were boys, first of all. And they, every, you know, they treated him as a boy, a friend of their kids, of their sons. And
some of Karina's friends, but not her good friends, had a tough time with it.
She's like, wait, so he's a boy now, and he has a boy name, he does boy things. It's like, yeah, pretty much.
Alex's best friend, no big deal.
He really didn't treat me any different. He just was like, okay, yeah, all right. And we're still really good friends.
Alex petitioned a judge and legally changed his name with relative ease. That meant he could change his name on his Social Security card. But in his home state, Alex cannot change his gender on his driver's license nor his birth certificate without a doctor's certification. The doctor must show a patient has had clinical treatment for a gender change and that the change is permanent and complete. Other Western states have different rules about changing gender on legal documents. In Idaho, for example, no change is ever allowed to a birth certificate. In Utah, a gender change can only come by court order, and there is no standard from county to county nor judge to judge. Utah also requires a check of the sex offender registry for anyone petitioning to change their gender.
I mean, this is my soapbox now. Why do we even need to know if someone's a male or a female? Why is that on our driver's license? Why do you, when you fly on the plane, do you have to put male or female? Why, when you sign up application, do you have to put that? Because there's no real reason that anybody should need to know that, except if you're trying to find a mate.
As summer ended, Mark and Cheryl let the elementary school principal, teachers, and counselor know Alex had legally changed his name and had transitioned to being a boy. Alex was the very first declared transgender student at his elementary, and on the first day of fourth grade, a challenge.
She was having the kids sit boy, girl, in the desks, which I didn't even enter my mind that that was going to be a problem. I'm just go sit in a boy spot. But apparently, you know, people who had known him before came up and said, you're not in the right spot. You need to move over. You're a girl. And
a couple of buddies spoke up saying Alex is right where he's supposed to be.
I'm glad that I picked the friends that don't care. Like, they only care about who you are, not what you are.
Classmates slowly got used to Alex being Alex, not Amy. And so did the family.
So the kid is the same kid. And acts the same and treats his brother and sister the same. It's just a matter of now we're all calling him he instead of she. I sometimes mess up the name, but they never mess up the name.
But when it became apparent this change was going to stick, Mark found himself a little sad.
Because he was so good in sports, competing as a girl, it blew me away. I like to see that. I had a tomboy, and now I was going to lose that forever.
Yeah, and I said, you never had one. Because we didn't. We never had a little girl. We did when he was a baby. But he was never a little girl.
I guess good for us from that point on. The same kid that came home from the hospital that wouldn't smile and moped around and argued with everything and went against whatever the rest of the family wanted to do was all smiles and just a happy, pretty much happy-go-lucky kid now.
When Alex began living as a boy, there was a remarkable change in him.
Well, because I've started putting myself out there, and I'm just friendly and nice and stuff. So
we've seen him just become much more outgoing and much more confident.
So confident, he won the job of student body president at the start of his fifth grade year.
This is what I said. All right, how we all doing today? Good, good, good. I can't hear you. Good, good. All right. Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, students and staff.
But while Alex was getting himself elected, his mom was trying to find him a doctor. The O'Neills couldn't find anyone in their rural western town with experience with transgender kids.
We are actually her first transgender child patient. So it's not that it's all out there, but she was willing to, do her own research and help us.
One of the O'Neills' first requests for this doctor, learning about and implanting a puberty blocker. Mark supported the medical intervention for Alex after meeting older transgender people.
Kind of see if you transition late in life, it's fairly obvious, and I think, unfortunately, those people are going to be subjected to a lot more harassment.
The hormone blocker is encased in a plastic bar, surgically tucked just under the skin below the armpit. It blocks female hormones, so Alex will not develop breasts nor have a period. There's an equivalent device to block male puberty.
And I think if you transition sooner with the hormone blockers and hormones, it will help them fit into what society thinks.
Now, I may not be as mind-blowing as Albert Einstein or as strong and fast as Michael Phelps.
The mental health of transgender kids is most at risk in these tween years. The onset of puberty can trigger gender dysphoria, extreme distress over the mismatch between the developing body and a young person's sense of his or her own gender.
That's the time that you're most vulnerable, because you're going through so many changes that you don't want to happen, that's when kids get into trouble with depression and suicide and whatnot.
The hormone blocker is coming into more and more common use for transgender kids so they can explore their gender identity before puberty.
I feel like we've had it pretty lucky because we've sort of known all along and we've not had to change too much and everybody's been really supportive. And plus, we have a female to a male, which is always somehow way more accepting than the other way around.
The O'Neills say Alex will probably begin to take testosterone in the next few years and so undergo male puberty. But any decision on surgery of any kind is a long way off.
I don't think that's a decision that we need to make right now, and I don't really know that he appreciates the magnitude of that. It's still your body, so you can still respect it and, not that it's a bad thing and that you want to cut parts off and whatnot, but that, you can still love your body and be transgender.
Thank you. You have been a great, great audience, and I will be here all day.
Faced his toughest body issues in the sport he loves.
Event 3, the 100 IM.
All three O'Neill kids swim competitively for their local YMCA. Alex competed well for the girls' team last year, but his dad says he was obviously uncomfortable.
He would have his cap and goggles on, and he would always have a robe on, and he would only take it off. Everything was at the last minute.
I didn't feel like I really wanted to go to any more meets if I had to stay swimming on the girls, because it just didn't feel like me. I just felt weird.
USA Swimming governs community swim clubs all over the United States, including the Y, where Alex swims.
We believe that kids should be emotionally, physically, and sexually safe in sport.
Director of Safe Sport for USA Swimming, Susan Wessner, works with local chapters with transgender athletes. She says their concerns are usually about two things: which events are appropriate and which swimsuit. USA Swimming has a very clear policy. Swimmers are allowed to choose the locker room, uniform, and team that match their gender identity.
And we have mostly had a gratitude from coaches and clubs where there is a family or a transgender athlete who would like to participate, and we're able to say, oh yeah, we have some guidelines for you. Here's...
When Alex asked to move to the boys' team, he got immediate support from the coach.
The boys' team. And all I did was say to the coach, he wants to swim on the boys' team. And she said, okay.
But these inclusive rules aren't the norm, not in school-based nor non-school-based sports around the West, nor in college and Olympic athletics. Karina says when Alex began swimming with the boys' team at the Y, some of their teammates quit coming to practice.
I was really confused. And there are a couple people that took a few months off, and then when they came back, and they called them a she, and so we just had to keep explaining it to them that it was a he now.
But on this day, for the first time in a major meet, Alex lines up with the boys.
I think he's a pretty good athlete, though. I think he can hold his own.
I just can't wait to feel that water just rushing on my back and stuff and my stomach when I get to be on the boys.
Wessner admires young transgender athletes for standing up for themselves in a sport that is so divided along gender lines.
How much these kids must love swimming, and that, you know, we have a shared love for swimming, and that brings us to a shared place to start with.
They were all still like supportive, like good job and good luck and stuff like that, so made me feel good.
In June, the fifth graders at Alex's elementary school welcomed their families for a send-off to middle school and a trip down memory lane. Alex won't be the first transgender student at his middle school, and he says he's looking forward to being Alex and not Alex who used to be Amy. His parents know the teenage years are just ahead with the parenting challenges there, and with Alex, dating will bring some additional concerns.
I think the kids will be fine. I don't know about the parents. You know, how the parents would feel if their kid came home and said, I'm dating so-and-so who's transgender. They might be happy.
The O'Neills are already talking to 11-year-old Alex about when, how, and if he'll share his status with the people he meets.
We're not worried about the kids that he deals with. We're more worried about their parents. Instilling the parents' values on their kids directed at our son.
So far, there have been no issues of Alex being bullied or harassed, but middle school brings new circumstances.
But I do sometimes worry about his safety, so I just want him to make sure he surrounds himself with people that he trusts and that are gonna, you know, watch his back.
Alex has his parents, siblings, family, and friends firmly in his corner.
Because he has a lot of close friends right now that are going to go with him to the same middle school. And so then if anyone else is going to be a jerk to them, they're going to stand up for him, and I will compound anybody that's really mean.
His parents have tried to protect him from stories of intolerance and violence against transgender people, but know they can't live their lives in a bubble.
This was never even on my radar. Didn't even know it existed. Now we see it. He's not alone.
At the end of the day, the O'Neills worry about Alex the same way they worry about all three kids.
You want your kid to grow up and be happy and be able to, you know, love somebody and have someone love them back. But I'm not so worried about that anymore because I've seen enough transgender couples that have found each other that I think that that's entirely possible.
The O'Neills have let Alex take the lead in his very personal journey.
He's just, you know, I guess he's fitting right in, and I think that's what he wants to do.
Oh, good times.
We've embraced it and let him know that we embrace it and let him know that we love him, and here's your journey and we're going to be here with you.
And on this day, surrounded by friends and family who know him well, all is right in Alex's world.
That made me really happy when I knew I could just be a boy.
Reporting from the Rocky Mountain West for Montana Public Radio, I'm Denise Dowling.
Denise Dowling is a professor of journalism at the University of Montana. Financial support for this project came from the School of Journalism and the University of Montana's Faculty Research Fund, with special thanks to Montana Public Radio.